Chapter 13. The Living Macroscope. Sir John Dee, one of the greatest satanic occultists that ever lived, was extremely well connected throughout the Europe. Along with Edward Kelly and others, he set about opening portals to other dimensions in order to speak with the angels, his fraternal counterparts in Europe, under his instruction, perform similar rites. Their obsession was to contact extraterrestrial, or preferably, pan-dimensional beings, the Archons. To do this, he invented what was known as Enochian magic, which, due to their adroit camouflaging, has been misunderstood to this day. Look through the quaint images and see the truth of this. These wizards and warlocks were involved, and are still involved, with the summoning of pan-dimensional entities, who were mistaken in the days of antiquity as demons and angels. See the classic British sci-fi series Doctor Who, specifically the following episodes: Planet of the Spiders, Demons, Mask of the Mandragora, Snacadence, Terror of the Zygons, The Silurians, Face of Evil, State of Decay, Return of the Mara, Pyramids of Mars, Horns of the Nymon, Nightmare in Eden, etc. Strangely, even with the brave attempts of writers and movie makers, it still comes as a shock to most to realize that the quaint anecdotes of magic in the Renaissance and Elizabethan periods are actually references to science. Sorcery and science are not as disconnected as is commonly insinuated, and it is not happenstance that almost all of the pre-industrial scientists, cosmologists, and chemists were master occultists. When one takes a closer look at the personalities behind the occult societies of the Elizabethan age, for instance, an interesting picture begins to form. Competent researchers or students of the occult, of Enochian magic, etc., recall how often the magical sigils resemble, or actually are, planetary and cosmic symbols. The full reason for this has long been concealed. The magic of the Middle Ages and the necromancy of the Dark Ages was for the same purposes as the technomancy of the modern age. The practitioners and their lackeys are all of one clan with the self-same agenda. When we hear of magicians in their circles of protection surrounded by planetary sigils and calling out the barbarous names of archangels and familiars, we must realize that this has to do with very physical phenomena. Let us look now beyond the mask to see what lies at the origin of these specific occult sciences and why the profusion of occultism among the European aristocratic intelligentsia at this time. Enochian magic is named after the Old Testament prophet, Enoch, but the name actually goes further back to the Sumerian, Enki, one of the original Anunnaki. It is more than significant that Dee chose this name for his divination. Sir John Dee was actually successful in his enterprise. He succeeded in opening his portal and entering into dialogue with oversouls from another dimension. This was not the first time in Earth history that this had been attempted, nor would it be the last. Every time it occurs, the consequences forever alter the course of history, usually for the worse. In the late Elizabethan age, or shortly thereafter, the opening of another interdimensional portal was necessitated. This time it was undertaken by members of the White Brotherhood, the descendants of the Sons of the Serpents, the Lemurians. They were attempting to counterbalance and assuage the attempt of the Bent Ones and to ask for guidance themselves that they may be successful in countering the influence of their nemesis. See Epilogue. Time to change the road you're on page 140. Sir John Dee entered into dialogue with these pan-dimensional intelligences to see whether he could learn from them the secrets to a higher form of technology, which would precipitate the escape from Earth of his masters. As a living macroscope, Dee found out that these pan-dimensional beings did indeed have answers. C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien both knew that aliens were in total control of post-diluvian Earth, that they had replicated a race of dragons or reptilians, that they were, since the experiments of the Elizabethans, in league with pan-dimensional entities. The latter, Lewis called them macrobes, mankind, he said, takes for granted the world of the microbe. Though not visible to the naked eye, one has merely to make use of the microscope to confirm their existence. However, on the level above the human, exist the macrobes. These cannot be seen with the naked eye either. Their existence is known, or intuited, by the subtle inner faculties of the sensitive or clairvoyant. The word Enochian literally means inner eye. Lewis implied that no one can ever come into an understanding of the peculiar history of planet Earth without a knowledge of these entities. But he also discovered that the macrobes did not take well to being contacted by creatures so lowly and presumptuous as he. His mind was nearly destroyed by the communion. The knowledge that the Dark Archons communicated through his consciousness was so vast and complex that it was soon, thereafter, realized by all concerned that it would literally take centuries to physically realize. It had to be decided whether to just give up altogether and remain interned on Earth forever, or to somehow try, against all the odds, to actualize the complex details of what was being relayed. The Tudor dynasty elites, with assurances from Dee, elected to press on. They put the most gifted minds at their disposal to the task of decoding into practical terms the strategies given from the beyond. Others were commissioned to come up with camouflage strategies to hide what was going on from those not privy to it and from members of the Lemurian offspring. It was the task of these intellectuals, these court-appointed or royal-affiliated alchemists, necromancers, diviners, and clairvoyants to translate into pragmatic strategies the voluminous instructions that were transmitted. Entire societies were established in respect of this purpose. The controversial adepts and alumni, such as William Blackhouse, Elias Ashmole, Robert Boyle, Tommaso de Campanella, Cagliostro, Comte Saint-Germain, Sir Kenelm Digby, Cornelius Drebbel, Robert Flood, Casanova, Nostradamus, Machiavelli, Cornelius Agrippa, etc., were more often than not either the creators or the members of so-called invisible colleges, and often in the employ of the plutocracy, theself. Named Black Venetians, these adepts were skilled in magical practices and could keep in contact with each other then, as they also do today, via telepathic resonance, their close world. Wide cooperation has been maintained by instantaneous intercommunications by telepathy, which has taught them, Ikiel Kushana, the ultimate frontier. The notorious antics of some of these characters were indulged by intellectuals and nobility throughout Europe. They could literally get away with murder, because they had the sanction of the highest in the land. Their occasional run-ins with the law were the more conscientious descendants of the Sons of the Serpent, like Christopher Marlowe, did not trouble them much either. Marlowe was finally dispatched by his enemies. Eventually, it was realized that no single scholar or group could hope to unravel the complex data in one lifetime, and that for many centuries scholars would have to consciously and unconsciously work on the material. They solved the problem by creating the bastions of learning which we now know as the great universities of the world. These were not open for the good of the world or for the spiritual uplifting of all mankind. They were seats of learning and research for the pan-dimensional data. Along with many churches and monasteries, universities became the epicenters for collation of the myriad researches that were frantically going on throughout the globe. See or read the name of the rose. These colleges housed and preserved the information gleaned through time. To make sure that only initiates had access, the Masonic-based fraternity structure was instigated. Virtually all the Royal Society founding members were Freemasons. One could reasonably argue that the Royal Society itself, at least in its inception, was a Masonic institution. Michael Bagent, Holy Blood and Holy Grail. It was only much later, to stifle curiosity and prevent class war, that the universities were finally open to the masses. The study of the architecture, symbolism, and geomantic positioning of the world's great seats of learning, such as the Smithsonian, comprises an entire subject in itself. One of the personalities that was set to work on the magnum opus of the Atlantean necromancers was Francis Bacon, whom some consider the father of modern science. In fact, the new scientific paradigms that came out of this period, the laws that were discovered about the universe and the nature of biological life, mostly arose from these thinkers and specialists recruited by Europe's black nobility to work on the meta plan. To cover this up, it has been put before us that there are certain times in history when, for no apparent reason, knowledge of a kind of flourishes and similar ideas become vogue. It is possible that many of the figures of early science were in the employ of the Dark Brotherhood. History reveals how many scientists were adroit occultists, and so are they today also, although it is very well covered up. The descent into our world of this knowledge on a wholesale level gave rise to the Age of Enlightenment and the Industrial Age. In fact, like Marlowe, William Shakespeare was also aware of what was going on behind the facade of events. Cryptically, he referred to the occult plan in his plays and seems to have warned against it. Shakespeare's plays contain complex alchemical and occult anecdotes, yet, for some strange reason, few academic scholars have drawn proper attention to them. There is also the controversy of the actual identity of Shakespeare. It has been surmised that the personage responsible for the plays was none other than Sir Francis Bacon, but that has not been confirmed. It is more likely that an exceptionally gifted descendant of the Sons of the Serpents was responsible for them. The works themselves contain encrypted ciphers which may reveal the authorship. Francis Bacon or Shakespeare and Francis Bacon and His Secret Society, by Mrs. Henry Pott. The information transmitted, channeled, by the pan-dimensional over souls was that there were indeed keys to the Stargate, but what these were and the manner of their implementation was not immediately attainable. In fact, the macrobes revealed that mankind would have to continue to advance technologically to the point where the secrets of how energy turns into matter could be studied and mastered. However, to even begin to understand the permutations of this first goal, centuries would first have to be spent learning about the exact opposite phenomenon, how matter becomes energy. This was the motivation behind the majority of post-industrial scientific research and experimentation and, obviously, not because mankind was evolving for the first time toward technical mastery. Phase 1 of Macrobe Lesson 1 was finally concluded when the Atlantean demigods succeeded in splitting the atom in the 1930s. A study of the lives and careers of those involved with atomic energy, like Leo Szilard and Robert Oppenheimer, will prove an interesting line of research for those interested in corroborating our disquisition. For instance, when Dr. Oppenheimer was asked whether his atomic detonation was a first in history, he enigmatically replied to the questioner, "Well, yes, in modern times, of course, only now, after almost a millennia, are they capable of embarking on the discovery of the reverse how energy becomes matter." Sun Microsystems, with its suggestive serpentine logo, Shri, and MIT are three of many corporations, funded by the black nobility, which are fronts for this research. Secret societies are a presence not only behind industry, but governments also. The symbol for the present European Union, for instance, was first suggested for the flag of the United States of Europe by the super-secret Priory de Sion, which is said to be headquartered in France. The Grand Masters and illustrious members of this order are descended from the medieval Merovingian kings who dated their ancestry back to the Israelite, King David. The word Merovingian comes from Merovi, meaning born from the sea. This does not, however, refer to the physical sea, but to the greater abyss, the night sky. The word and image of the sea have long been used as a cryptic simulacra for the heavens, so that what is said to be born in it is really born extraterrestrially. See 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. The Greek word amphibious means simply life on two planes. The word was often applied in antiquity to those men who, though still wearing a human form, had made themselves almost divine through knowledge, and lived as much in the spiritual super-sensuous regions as on earth. The Theosophical Glossary, the most common symbol used by the Merovingians was the serpent, or the dragon. Indeed, the most well-known amphibian god was Dagon, whose name connotes dragon. One of the Merovingian kings bore the name Dagobert.